Zen Buddhism, that a lot of the practice, where it really counts, is not so much in great abstractions, but practice is really about the moment-to-moment details of your life, how you take care of the little things, because the little things that add up to become the big things. And so attention to detail is a very important part of certainly Zen Buddhism, maybe anybody's anybody who has a mindful life. So walking meditation is part of that. And in thinking today about walking meditation, I was reminded of this marvelous word, journey. And we talk about a spiritual journey and a spiritual life. Thomas Merton said, a spiritual life is first of all a life. And I like that because many times people kind of add a little bit of spirituality kind of on the weekend or something, weekend spirit, you know, Buddhists or whatever. And I realized that for spirituality to really be serious about a spiritual life, that it's something that is supposed to infuse your whole life. It's a life in and of itself. It's not something extra you add kind of to patch things up or to make things a little bit better. So a spiritual journey, I like the word journey a lot because in this etymological sources of the word, it comes from the French word jour, means a day. And apparently when they first coined this word, it was a journey was a distance you traveled in one day. And that depended, you know, if it was mountainous or if it's flat or if you had a horse or a donkey, you know, it varied how far you would go. But it was however far you went by the end of the day. It was a journey. And I like that in relationship to spirituality because it de-emphasizes the goal about some particular place you're getting. It just is the process. It's a process of how you engage yourself. It's the how of how we live our life that is more important than where we're getting and what we're going to attain, in a sense. So a spiritual journey is less about a goal than it is about how we walk, both metaphorically and literally. How do we walk through our life? And this thing, you know, most people think of meditation as something we do in sitting posture, and especially sitting this way cross-legged on the floor. And it kind of seems kind of special, you know, it's this wonderful Asian thing, you know, a yogic posture, and it seems really kind of maybe kind of mystical or special or unusual or something. But I don't think that's the point. I think the point of the posture is just supposed to be an ordinary, simple posture that's hopefully a stable and comfortable posture to sit in. And all you're doing is sitting. And there's nothing special, you know, it's nothing like, you know, you could be doing better yogic exercises, you know, if you wanted to do exercise than just sitting quietly doing here. It's a very simple, ordinary activity we do all the time, but we invest it with our awareness, with our attention, and we take this very simple, ordinary thing, and we bring attention to see if we can wake up our life, clarify our life, understand our life through this very simple activity. And we do it regularly. You know, the repetition of it is very important, and coming back regularly to this posture, this position, this activity, and then becoming familiar with what happens to our mind, our hearts, our feelings over time so we can start becoming more awake, more sensitive, more aware, more heartful. But, you know, in itself, it's just an ordinary activity, just sitting here. And I stress this today because the point of mindfulness practice is not simply leave you only with a meditation practice, but it's to bring you, suggest to you that there's a possible way of living a spiritual life through bringing attention to all the ordinary activities and unordinary activities that we have in our daily life. And walking is one of those. I've known myself and I've known many people who have overlooked the ordinary in their life as a domain for spiritual practice because of chasing after some wonderful ideal religious abstraction. Enlightenment, you know, enlightenment or bust, or, you know, or try to attain some great concentration or great peace or whatever. And so we're in a hurry to get to the meditation hall and we don't notice, you know, that we cut off that pedestrian, you know, or, you know, we don't notice that we cut off the person in the traffic getting here. Getting here, you know, that's just getting here, right? That doesn't count. what counts is getting here, and then she can sit and get enlightened. But everything counts, because everywhere you find yourself, that's where you are. And that's where your chance is to become awake, to become free, to be attentive, to be sensitive. And whatever way you want to talk about your spiritual life, it'll only happen if you bring yourself into the present moment. And you have, it's the option you have to wait until you get somewhere and then do it, or begin cultivating ability to do it in all your activities, and it can be the most ordinary activities you do it in. And a lot of the value of monastic life, where traditionally where meditation practice and mindfulness practice was cultivated, is not that monastic life is, again, some wonderful, esoteric, special, mystical kind of life, but rather that all the ordinary activities that monastics do, and they do all the ordinary activities, many of the ordinary activities that we do. Sometimes they cook and they clean and they hang out and they talk and study and teach and do many, many things. But all the things they do becomes their practice. There's nothing which is considered outside of practice. It isn't like, let's get through these dishes, wash the dishes as quickly as we can so we can get to the meditation hall. The dishes are infused with, if I use the theme from earlier when I talked about every breath is a prayer, they infuse dishwashing with as a prayer, or they infuse it with sacredness, with presence, with themselves. They invest themselves, they inhabit, they bring themselves into the activity. And so that's what makes up monastic life. It's nothing really different than what we do. It's just the how, the process of what they bring to it that's different. Maybe we could do that more in our normal life. And that's my hope, is that as we take to mindfulness practice, we begin exploring ways to spread it out into our normal life. Now, walking is one of the beautiful places where mindfulness meditation is practiced. It's one of the formal meditations. There's informal and formal. Sitting posture is considered a formal practice. Washing dishes is considered informal. But walking meditation can be either formal or informal, depending on how you do it. But it's one of the formal meditations. And if you go on retreat, we alternate sitting meditation with walking meditation. We go back and forth, usually equal periods of each. And on retreats, it's very important to do that, because the tendency is in sitting meditation is that if we sit around all the time, our energy tends to drop. It tends to be calming or pacifying to sit this way. And if you sit all the time without doing anything else, you start falling asleep or get very lethargic. And so it's very important to infuse your practice with a certain amount of energy. And so we get up and do some walking. And the walking infuses it with energy. But if we walked all the time, it would be too much energy and be agitated, and your mind maybe think too much. So then we sit again. So we go back and forth. And on a one-day retreat or on a longer retreat, going back and forth ideally creates this nice balance. And both the calm and the energy can both get strengthened with time. You can get stronger and stronger concentration and calm because there's the proper amount of energy to balance it. So it's a very important part of retreat practice. However, there is a tendency in the Buddhist world, in the Vipassana world, for people to think that sitting practice is where it's really at. Sitting practice is where you're going to get enlightened after all, and so you know this is where you're going to do your huffing and puffing and really make your best effort and whatever. And if you're on retreat and it's time to walk, well, you get up and walk, and you're kind of a dutiful yogi, so you walk because the schedule says that, or maybe you'll get some tea instead. You know, whatever, you take a break, and people don't take it often as seriously. But both of them are equal in value and equal in opportunity in terms of doing the work of waking up and being present. Some people find that walking meditation works a lot better for them, and they actually will do more walking than sitting. Some people will, in their daily meditation practice, will not do sitting meditation, but will do walking meditation because they find that works better for them. And that's as a wonderful and valid thing to do as just to sit. Also, what's nice about walking meditation is that it's much more an ordinary activity that's like our normal life. Maybe many of you sit at desks all the time, so sitting is ordinary enough, but walking is more kind of, I think our eyes are open and we're kind of walking about. So the beginning to understand or to bridge the practice into our normal life happens a little bit easier if you become familiar with walking meditation and make it a regular part of your practice. And then you might find that if you start cultivating a appreciation of awareness, of mindfulness as you walk, that you might find many opportunities in daily life to start practicing. You don't have to simply do it in formal periods. We say, I'm going to walk now for half an hour and do the formal practices that we do. But you might, I know of people who've chosen to make every day to decide to do walking meditation from their car in the parking lot to their office. So maybe it's only 100 yards or 200 yards or whatever, but that walk, they consider it to be their spiritual practice, and they'll always be mindful during that walk. Maybe not the other walks during the day, but at least that point on there. Or different period, different times of the day, you know, certain walks or certain places, as a way of getting centered and settled and arriving here, beginning to wake up. And I love walking. I think walking is one of the great activities to be done. Maybe it's a little bit irrational, but it's just a wonderful thing, feeling for the body. And I love what it does to my inner sensibility, my sense of settledness and connectedness to myself and connectedness to the world around me. And how I find for myself usually that when I walk, it's a little bit harder to be preoccupied. In a really hard way. Somehow the movement of walking lubricates the mind also a little bit more than it would otherwise be. And so I find that I get more settled and more relaxed and more open, more fluid when I just walk. I love to walk. I walk in the hills and where I live. So walking is a really great thing. I mean, there's probably been many odes of praise made to walking. Probably many of you like to walk. And then the last thing I'll say before I tell you the actual instructions for walking meditation, and maybe I'm repeating myself, is that many of us in our activities in our life focus very much on goals, on what we're trying to accomplish, and overlooking the how of how we do things. And it isn't that one is, you know, we have to set them up in opposition to each other, but spiritual life is much more to do with the how we do something than it is with what we do. And so you can do many different things, but how you do it, would you do it with presence, you do it with awareness, you do it with care, with attention, with love, or do you do it mindlessly, or you do it in a hurry, do you do it reluctantly or hesitantly or impatiently or unconsciously? How do we do it? To pay attention to that, and what is most satisfying? What's the most satisfying way to do it? Do we wash dishes to wash the dishes, or do we wash dishes to get it over with, so we can go on and watch television or go on to the next thing? The how is important. So the how then of walking, walking is a wonderful place to study how we do something, because you're going to get to the same place probably almost by the same speed paying attention to how as the goal. But how do you get there when you walk somewhere? How are you when you walk there? So the formal walking meditation is done by, it can be done anyway, any old way you want. And what I'm trying to say here is we can do it informally, just as we walk around our day. But there is a formal way of doing it. And that is to choose a walkway, a pathway, that's about 30 or 40 feet long. And it should be level and clear. And it should be some place where you can simply walk back and forth without being concerned about negotiating any paths or obstacles or whatever. So you walk back and forth. And sometimes people ask, well, why can't I walk in a circle? Or why can't I just meander about? Well, you can. That's what I'm saying. You can in your normal life. But in formal meditation, it's quite useful to kind of have a pathway, because if you're just wandering around, then you're always negotiating your path a little bit. Should I turn a right here, turn left here, should I avoid this or whatever? And a part of your mind is always busy thinking about that, preoccupied, even if it's a very small part of your mind. But if you're walking back and forth 30 or 40 feet, pretty quickly you know the route. And so that part of the mind can kind of be at rest, and you can just be more fully present with the activity itself. So it's simply a matter of walking back and forth and being mindful, this simple activity of walking back and forth, just being present, coming back into the body, coming back to the activity of walking, in the same way as we come back to our breathing when we do walking, when we do sitting meditation. The pace in which we walk is something you regulate or decide for yourself. Any pace that seems appropriate. And what appropriate, the gauge for appropriateness, I suggest, is whatever brings you a sense of ease as you walk. And some days it might be faster than other days, some days slower than other days. If you go on retreat, you'll see that people walk very slow sometimes, or a lot of people do. And if you go on really long retreats, you sometimes wonder if they're walking at all. You just, like, you know, and it's kind of, you go to a retreat and there's 50 meditators and they're all kind of like zombies, like Night of the Living Dead, you know. And so there's a certain amount of peer pressure to walk slow on retreats. And I always recommend that you don't succumb to peer pressure in terms of walking meditation, but rather find out what brings you a sense of ease and then walk in that pace. When you're very tired and energy is really lagging, you might want to walk really fast. My teacher in Burma, he power walked when he did his walking meditation. I had, you know, just really fast, back and forth, back and forth. And when I, you know, certainly when I'm tired, sometimes when I do walking meditation before my morning meditation, if I'm really sleepy and haven't kind of quite woken up yet, I'll do walking meditation back and forth for 5 or 10 minutes until the kind of the energy is there, and then I'll go and sit. But if it's later in the day, then usually it's kind of a much slower pace. So whatever kind of brings you a sense of ease, or whatever brings you the kind of energy you feel you might need to help you be present. And then, so it's a matter of one walking back and forth, and so it's a matter of just walking back and forth, and you can stand in any kind of, have your hands in any way that's more or less symmetrical. I vary sometimes. I often have mine in my pocket when I do walking meditation, or you have them behind your back or in front, or, you know, anything. You can probably think of your own creative ways, but something that makes them comfortable, so you can keep them that way for a while. And then I usually find it's nice when I begin to actually start by just standing. And just kind of feel myself grounded in my body, grounded in my soles of my feet on the ground, and just kind of feel myself here, and then just start walking, at whatever pace that is. Usually it's kind of slower than a normal walking pace, but again, it's up to you. And whereas in sitting practice, the primary focus is, you know, the central focus is the breath, kind of the middle, the central, the mandala. In walking meditation, the center is the feet walking. But first, you know, again, establish a sense of ease throughout the whole body. So it's an embodied sense of the whole body, kinesthetic sense of the body walking, walking through space, not just your mind walking, you know, mind thinking about walking, but really you enter your body as you walk. And then from there, we drop our attention down to the feet and the lower legs. And it's the rhythmic pattern of the lower, of the feet moving that is where the attention rests. And we pay attention to the leg that's actually doing the stepping. Actually, that's where the intention is to make the step. And just feeling the sensations. In the breath, we feel expansion and contraction and pressure and warmth and tingling and letting go and tightening. And there's many sensations in the breath where you can on which we rest the attention. So there are many sensations in the feet as we walk. There's the hardness of touching the ground. There's the tightening of the leg as we lift it. There's the feeling of maybe vibration or something as we move it through the air, and the contact with the ground, and releasing of the tautness of the muscles. And there's many sensations. And it isn't that you have to kind of analyze all these sensations, but it's these kind of the flow of all these sensations where we rest the attention, with the rhythm of it, with the kinesthetic feeling of it. And as we walk, it's very useful to label the steps, kind of mental notes, to help us be present for each step, kind of encourage us to be there rather than letting the mind kind of wander freely. And so you can either just kind of label each step stepping or walking or whatever. Or what's more useful is to be a little more exact, but maybe by saying right, left. So you encourage the mind, kind of nudge the mind, the attention, to be there for the right foot as it does a stepping. Right, left. And then I like to point out that it gets to be kind of cute, because this right and left will teach you when your mindfulness is slipped a little bit. Because at some point you'll find yourself going left, right. And then that is a sign that the labeling and your attention has become even mechanical rather than really alive and living. When people walk slow, sometimes they break up the steps into three parts, and they go lifting, moving, placing. So they can really connect their attention to each of the three phases of each step. So it's because the idea is we want the attention to be resting continuously through the movement. You can maybe imagine yourself like a dancer who's resting continuously through the movement. And rather than just kind of, you know, a checklist approach to mindfulness, and just, oh, middle of the step, you know, I'm stepping, and then you keep thinking about dessert, you know, and then left foot moment, and then the rest of it's about, you know, whatever. So sometimes a little bit, you know, having some very, very subtle imagery, not active imagery that you kind of think about regularly, but just something to kind of get you started, can be helped with the walking. Like, just, you know, maybe as a dancer, or maybe as waves, you know, each step is a wave kind of moving through the ocean or something, or coming against the shore. And just something kind of to help you kind of connect for a moment or two with the continuous flow of sensations with each step. And then just let your attention be there with that. When we come to the end of your 30 or 40 feet, you turn around and then do the same thing over again, coming back, and go back and forth. The mind, of course, as you know, will wander away in all kinds of things. If it's easy, then just simply come back to the steps. You just do that. If it's not so easy, you can come to a full stop in your place, and just kind of take stock and just be mindful, no thinking, or whatever you're feeling. And when you feel like it's kind of passed or no longer grabs your attention, then you can proceed with your walking, start again. If the eyes are kept open during walking meditation, so sometimes sights will grab your attention. And when it does, and if you really, what you want to do is look at something, what you want to do is, again, stop and do looking meditation. What you don't want to do is do two things at once. So you don't want to kind of, you know, pretend you're doing walking meditation, you know, walking along, and really what you're doing is kind of like, you know, gazing at this beautiful flower. And because then you're doing two things at once, and you're not really wholeheartedly in any one thing. So just stop, so you can be wholeheartedly looking, and then when you're ready, wholeheartedly walk. If you ever find yourself walking really fast because you're really sleepy or tired, it's mostly a matter of just being aware of the contact of the feet touching. Just touch, contact, touch. And just doing that regularly, repeatedly. In some schools of Buddhism, like in Zen, where they do a lot of walking meditation also. They do it differently. One way they do it is they coordinate their steps with the breathing. And it's a wonderful way to do it, but in Vipassana we don't do it that way, because this idea that we're trying to be, really be with one thing at a time. And if you're trying to coordinate and be with, have half your attention your step and part of it with the breathing, then it's not, you know, you're not really being able to concentrate on just one activity at a time. Let's see. Sometimes if I walk for 45 minutes or an hour or whatever, however long I'm doing the walking meditation, I'll vary the speed. Sometimes the first 20 minutes, say I'm sitting walking for an hour, the first 20 minutes I'll walk pretty fast, maybe faster than a street pace. And then the second 20 minutes I'll go slower, and then the last 20 minutes I'll go really slow. Kind of just as I settle into it and become more present. So I think that's all. Do you have any questions about that? Yes.
I do. I didn't quite catch that, the looking part. Are you supposed to be looking more or less at your feet?
Oh, you look. You can have your eyes kind of 45 degrees to the ground, kind of looking down.
And not concentratedly looking at any particular thing.
Yeah. That's not what we're doing. I mean, you have to be looking in order to know where you are. But you're not preoccupied or focused on it.
Okay.
And kind of a loose focus. But if something does catch your attention and you really want to look at it, then just stop and look.
Typically aren't swinging your hands.
Not. No, I guess you could. Let's see. If I'm going really fast, what do? I have to do it. I don't know what I do when I walk really fast. It doesn't matter. But if you're walking slow, that's another option. Just have them loosely on the side. And you're walking slow enough, they're not going to swing. It's a beautiful thing, walking meditation. For some people, it takes a while to get the hang of it or appreciate it. It did for me for a long time. I spent many times just kind of being a dutiful meditator, just doing it because I was supposed to, and my teacher insisted I had to. But slowly, I began to appreciate it. Now I have a great appreciation for it, for its value and usefulness, both on retreat and as a formal meditation practice, and as a informal practice throughout the day. Some of you, for example, who are relatively new, you might want to extend how long you sit or meditate, and say you meditate for half an hour at home every day, but you like to actually be able to practice more. But you can't really, knees don't really allow you to sit longer than half an hour. So what you might do is do some walking meditation, either before or after, sit for half an hour, walk for 10, and sit for another half an hour, or sit for half an hour and walk for 15 minutes, and then go about your day, or some combination like that, if you're interested in extending your practice. Any other questions? Yeah.
I read somewhere there's a value to walking with your hands clasped.
It might be. In Zen, they hold the hands together. And I think, there are advantages to having hands together like this, like in Zen, collapsed together. Just as in sitting practice, there's advantages sitting in full lotus posture. But those advantages, we're not kind of... in Vipassana, we're trying to be really ordinary and not rely too much on the yogic effects of certain postures. Like full lotus has certain yogic effects, and perhaps doing this also has certain kind of yogic effects We're just trying to be ordinary and cultivate the awareness in the ordinary, through the ordinariness, rather than doing something special to kind of have a special effect. But, you know, so we don't teach anything special in our tradition, in the Vipassana tradition. Yes?
So our breathing just takes care of itself. There's absolutely no conscious pointing of awareness.
Right. Right. So why don't you all stand and we'll do a little exercise. And stand in such a way that there's some space in front of you to take a couple of steps. And so then just simply close your eyes. And take a moment to go from the tip of your head and just kind of scan through your body down to your soles of your feet. Kind of enter your body and kind of just feel your body from the inside all the way down to your feet. And then when you get to your feet, just feel the soles of your feet against the floor. And feel how your weight is distributed on your feet. Is your weight more on your heels or more on the balls of your feet or more on the left foot or the right foot? And if you can readjust the weight so that you're balanced and grounded, you could do that. And then bring your attention to the sole, to your left foot. Just bring your attention to your left foot. And then feel how those sensations in your left foot shift as you now slowly shift most of your weight over onto your left foot. And then once you have a lot of your weight there, just feel the weight, the pressure, the hardness, the different sensations. And then staying the way you are, bring your awareness, your attention only to your right foot and feel how that is. And then slowly feeling, keeping your attention in your right foot, noticing how things change, slowly move your weight over onto your right foot. And then place your attention again on your left foot, only your attention. And then this time, keeping your attention there in the left foot, slowly take a step forward. And then shift your weight to your left foot. And then bring your attention to your back foot, your right foot, and with awareness, take a step forward and shift your weight. And then bring your attention again to the back foot and do the same again. Okay, and then you can go back to your place. So that was walking, you know, taking very short, slow steps. But it's, I did that exercise in order to give you a sense, perhaps, of the kinds of sensations and how where we place our attention when we do the walking. First thing, again, to repeat, first we kind of find and establish a sense of ease as we walk. And then once we have that sense of ease, then we just go down and feel those sensations resting there. The mind wanders away, we come back to the feet. If the mind wanders away, we come back to the feet and we rest there and stay there, cultivating presence there, concentration there. And that's the basic, simple practice of walking meditation. Yes. So, I like this poem by the Japanese poet Nanao Sakaki. If you have time to chatter, read books. If you have time to read, walk into the mountains, deserts, and the oceans. If you have time to walk, sing songs and dance. If you have time to dance, sit quietly, you happy, lucky idiot. I'll make you one. So why don't all of us happy lucky idiots sit quietly for a few moments. Catholic monk Thomas Merton was convinced that if you let the hours of the day saturate you and you gave them time, something would happen. He said that one of the best things that happened to him when he entered into retreat was, and he said, quote, being attentive to the times of the day when the birds began to sing and the deer came out of the morning fog and the sun came up. The reason we don't take time is a feeling that we have to keep moving. This is a real sickness. We must approach the whole idea of time in a new way. We are free to love, and we must get free from all imaginary claims. We live in the fullness of time. The whole thing boils down to giving ourselves in prayer a chance to realize that we have what we seek.